And now back to Mae Brussel and dialogue. Well, actually, it's not Dialogue Conspiracy anymore. It's World Watchers International.
Yeah, we're World Watchers. Today, when I started getting letters from overseas and people overseas were getting tapes from different countries, and I thought it was time that we get on and become World Watchers. And besides that, we watch the world, and they watch us, so we have to watch them in order to survive. That's the name of the game, I suppose. Okay, now I'm on this side of the tape, side two. Just in simplistic terms of the Atlanta, Georgia, and the Georgia connections to Jimmy Carter, down where the Coca-Cola companies are, and of course a common denominator between California and the Southwest, all through the Southwest, is the Defense Department. But when Jimmy Carter allowed or coaxed the Shah of Iran to depart from Iran, and he left and went his way, we saw a tremendous escalation in terms of narcotics from the Middle East, coming from Lebanon, Libya, Turkey, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and through Iran, just pouring in maybe 40 to 50% increase since 1978. And while Jimmy Carter served his oil lords very well by lifting the lid so that the profit of oils went up tremendously, he also served the Middle East connections and the narcotic connections. And in between the Southeast Asia and the Middle East connections, there is the South American connections of Colombia, Argentina, Bolivia, Costa Rica, and Mexico. Massive amounts of narcotics, hashish, marijuana, cocaine, coming two ways, one to California and the other into Florida. And I think the influx of the South American narcotics has increased tremendously, again linked to the Middle East, a great deal of it, since Jimmy Carter was president. But this is something that Ronald Reagan can't use as a campaign issue because he is so closely linked to this other team that had control of the narcotics traffic before Jimmy Carter was president. There is a new book out by Robert Eringer on the Bilderberg Group and the Trilateral Commission called The Covert Power Groups of the West. Robert Eringer is that writer who had gone into infiltrated the Klan, who had called me. He's from London. Pentacle Books in London published his book, and he's the one that wanted to interview me about my research in our program, World Watchers. I've talked to him on the telephone to New Jersey, but didn't give out too much information. That's another story in itself. But the very common belief is that the power of the world in terms of money or banking exists through David Rockefeller. And in this book, on the Trilateral Commission, Eringer has a couple of sentences in there that support what I see as happening with the Carter administration. He said, this is a quotation, "It is interesting to note that during Carter's presidential campaign, the Georgia Mafia, Hamilton Jordan, Jody Powell, and he mentions these other people, deeply distrusted Carter's involvement with Brzezinski, Rockefeller, and the Trilateral Commission, that even though they selected him as president, the Georgia Mafia was very suspicious of them. Carter whirled a full 180 degrees on the advice from his trilateralists in April of 1978 when he decided not to deploy the neutron bomb." Well, Carter also whirled 180 degrees away from the Rockefeller establishment, which he writes about in his book, The Bilderbergers and the Trilaterals. He betrayed them in terms of serving the mafia in the South, in Georgia, and the narcotics connections, and turned his back to that Team AEA that I was talking about that had control of the narcotics prior to Jimmy Carter coming into the White House. Specifically, he coaxed the Shah of Iran out. There's a long article this week in a book. It's written by Mr. Sullivan, the ambassador to Iran, William Sullivan, and a quotation, "The United States, on the eve of the Shah's departure, was left without any policy. I overlooked the Brzezinski factor. They thought that Brzezinski could handle or make war or attack or control the foreign policy in Iran. But Carter had even more control than Brzezinski, and the flow of the narcotics from Iran just pours into New York, Germany, California, Washington, and all over the world at this point. This turnabout that Jimmy Carter made against the Trilateral Commission is not explained by anybody, and maybe I am the first person to do this and share this with you on the air and to study this thing out. Carter turned against the people, the Trilateralists or the Bilderbergers in certain respects. He eased the Shah out. He sent a representative there who told him to get out and they would have a provisional government, and then it never came about. He eased out Somoza with his connections to these various drug characters and so forth around the world and got that dictator out of the country and sent him down to South America. His administration indicted Carlos Marcello, one of the largest mob bosses in the world, probably next to Meyer Lansky in influence. Carlos Marcello has been indicted on various charges in the Abscam story. He indicted Mr. Davidson, Irv Davidson, who's worked with the assassination team. Marcello has worked with the assassination teams, the teams that were with Nixon and Reagan throughout the rising of their careers. The Carter administration indicted Carlos Marcello, which is a dangerous thing to do. They indicted Irv Davidson, the public relations man who's threatened to blow this matter to the winds. They indicted a man in the Abscam story, this representative John Murphy from New York, whose trial is going on at this time. I did a tape on Murphy last February, an article in the Village Voice by Jack Newfield. Murphy was linked to Thomas Gambino, the mafia leader of the Gambino narcotics gang. He was linked to Iranian oil and on the board of directors of the Shah's Foundation, the Pahlavi Foundation. He went to West Point with Somoza of Nicaragua and was close to Somoza. So that Murphy was indicted this year in the Abscam organized crime payoffs. His buddy from West Point, Somoza, was kicked out of Nicaragua. His buddy, the Shah, that he represented, the Pahlavi Foundation in Manhattan, was kicked out of Iran. These were courageous moves on the part of Jimmy Carter, but very subtle moves as a new team took over with this increase of the narcotics going on. He had the Abscam group under his Justice Department indicted Jenrette, who's now, I guess that case is ready to go to the jury. He was linked to organized crime and crime figures, and there are 80 to 90 more indictments or investigations going on, and each could bring in 3 to 4 or 10 arrests. The men indicted in Pennsylvania have already been given their charges and will probably go to jail. And Representative Williams, with his connections to New Jersey and the casinos and worldwide organized crime, he's under indictment. It took a lot of courage to do that, but only by getting rid of those people under his administration, Carter could cling the turf for other people that also his group had close links to. And I've done many hours on the Carter drug connections, and I'll do more. Now, I have mentioned the very sad fact, speaking of drug connections, about Stephen Reinhardt. I did a tape last June on Reinhardt. He's the chief of the Los Angeles Police Commission, and he was nominated to become a judge. The Senate Judiciary was to hear the nomination, and he was linked to Carlos Marcello and the mob and organized crime. And he was also linked to crime members. He comes from Los Angeles, the LAPD, and all of the police officials were rooting for his appointment. Daryl Gates, Evel Younger, who works with this California connection, were rooting to get Reinhardt as a judgeship so that if any of their turf go before the courts, they would have Reinhardt on the appeals court in California. Well, this week, Reinhardt was approved as a U.S. judge. Stephen Reinhardt, president of the Los Angeles Police Commission, was approved by the Senate to be a judge on the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. This judgeship was delayed, according to Los Angeles Times, because of unsubstantiated charges of organized crime by an informant and our California Senator Cranston, of course, in quotes, was divided by the approval. The California West Coast group are thrilled to have on the appeals court a man who worked with the Los Angeles Police Department at the time that Robert Kennedy was murdered, the time that Thane Caesar from Lockheed killed Robert Kennedy, at the time of investigation of Isla Vista or Ruben Salazar, any of the murders and counterintelligence people that would ever come up for appeal or murder charges. Reinhart will now be the appeal judge, and he will move to San Francisco, the Ninth Judicial Court, where he's going to hear cases from California, Arizona, and Nevada, and Hawaii. Those are four of the largest drug connections in the United States linked to those Nixon-Reagan combines, and also Oregon and Washington, Montana, and Idaho. So that the new judge, the federal judge on the appeals court, will be a man, Stephen Reinhart, who's been named by Joseph Hauser, an informant with the Abscam story. He had information about bribery and kickbacks and so forth. This man had been charged himself with that, but he talked about political contributions to state candidates from members of crime figures that involved Reinhart at time period in 1973 at the height of Watergate and so forth. This man has made certain charges which should have been heard more seriously, but in an election year and with everything going the way it is, they didn't take a Senate vote person to person. It was simply a voice vote for something this important as an appeal court in California. And yay, yes, that's it. And so now we have Stephen Reinhart on the appeals court. Very important to save all decisions you find in newspapers from now on, who gets the prosecutions and who gets released, because of the importance of people with even the suggestion of mob links being on the courts. But because there is a mob war at the very highest level, geographically, for if it's a $40 billion business, and that's probably a very modest figure, not including all the pornography and child prostitution and whatever the mob does, and extortion, blackmail, and so forth, a $40 billion figure in the United States, when you're fighting for that kind of turf, you have to have judges on a bench that let you out easy, and you have to have judges that lock up certain people who are willing to squeal or talk and see that the system flows so that the maximum amount of crime people are back out on the streets operating again. They have so much money they put in the hands of the politicians that they're very important. They grease their palms and get just about everything they want. There's a wonderful book on Watergate, the story of Watergate, called The Breaking of a President. Many of you have it, some of you don't. And there's a story about the Nixon connection. But when you read about the Nixon connection compiled by Marvin Miller, you have to realize that there isn't a hair's breadth difference between Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. They're put in by the same people for the same purposes. And in this book, they have a list of the commuted sentences and the pardons that Richard Nixon did, and they have them year by year in alphabetical order, and the 500 people in the last year that Nixon let off that Charles Spears is talking about is exemplified in the indexing of the kind of people that were fully pardoned or commuted by Nixon in 1970. I'm not going to read you the whole list of things. April 17, 1970. Pardons for people embezzlement of mail, stealing registered letters, larceny, illegal aliens, perjury, false statements to the VA, mail fraud, security, conspiracy to defraud, failure to supply information, forged securities, income tax evasion, narcotics, breaking and entering, furnishing false passports, furnishing false bank records, embezzlement of property, stolen cars, falsifying evidence of federal housing, mail fraud, securities, obscene letters, fraud in sale of securities, selling heroin, transporting securities, tampering with mail, false merchandise claims to the Army, embezzlement of bank funds, theft on government reservations, theft on government property. This book has a list of hundreds of crimes and pardons that Richard Nixon commuted, starting in 1969 with a man for an armed bank robbery that was commuted, and the 1970 escalating the pardons and letting these people out, you name it, every possible kind of crime. And then when they sell adulterated, misbranded coffee, they sell heroin, but it could be a $40 million heroin bust or a $20 million, even the details, there's not enough space for. So these kinds of pardons and commuting of sentences require judges on appeals courts or on the benches that either don't prosecute them in the first place or let them off in the second place. And it's very important to know that in this narcotic war, as it lines up, that when these men pressured to get this judge out here in California, they were protecting the Reagan team that's coming into power and were able to influence Carter to get this appointment to protect this team. Even though they fight with each other, there was pressure put on him, and goodness knows what kind of pressure that could be. Another article that's terribly important in the news this week that is equally disgusting is that appointment is the one about Frank Turple and George Corcola. When I came back on KLRB after a 2 years absence, I returned July 27th, and I gave a list of what I considered the most important news stories of that week and of the past 2 years that I had been off KLRB, even though I had been making radio tapes for other stations. And number one story was the arrest of Frank Turple from Washington, D.C., with his links to Libya and CIA and gun running, narcotics, and Nazi, their links to the killing of the Jews at the Munich Games, and to the Carlos, the terrorist, and what passed off as left-wing terrorism was proved to be funded and supplied and trained by the CIA. Well, these guys, Turple and Corcola, were picked up in first of this year in New York City, December the 24th. They had 10,000 guns, and they were seized with $2 million machine gun sale. Members of the CIA and Corcola worked in New Jersey. He even supplied security for Exxon, Scotland Yards, and the Secret Service in the United States. They worked with an arms dealer in London, Mr. Samuel Cummings of the CIA. Frank Turple had an office in McLean, Virginia, and worked with Mitchell Werbel at the silencers and weapons for assassinations. Well, the men were supposed to go to trial, Turple and Corcola in New York, for these selling of these arms and weapons and possible murder charges linked to Libya. And Turple was also arrested in Washington, D.C. to go to trial with another person, Edwin Wilson of the CIA, who I said was involved with the CIA anti-Castro Cubans, with the Letelier murder, with the Operation the Condor down in Chile, the assassination teams that are sent all over the world. These two men were very important people, Corcola and Turple, and then, of course, along with them, this Ed Wilson was an important person of the CIA who was to be in trial in Washington with Turple. Well, the New York Times had an article this week, not on the front page, not the front section of the second page, but section B, second section, page 3, three-sentence article, just titled Arms Selling Case. Two men accused of offering to sell guns to undercover agents posing as revolutionaries failed to appear at the start of their trial, and warrants were issued for their arrest. Frank Turple, 40 years of age, from McLean, Virginia, a former CIA man, and George Corcola, 38, who owns an industrial security firm in Nutley, New Jersey, were supposed to appear on the weapons charges. They have skipped their bail and gone out, I suppose, out of the country. The judge said, we can try them in absentia, Judge Thomas Galligan, as if that's important, to try these men in absentia. They're arming the left, they're arming the right, they're training the Libyan army to make war against Israel. They supply Idi Amin, they supply the terrorists over the world that are due bombing and killing. They work with the CIA, and now they have left the country. The Washington Post had a small article the same date, McLean man fails to show for New York trial. And they mentioned that he had a trial coming up also in Washington, D.C. and Virginia, that he was running a training school in Libya for terrorists, funded by the CIA, and he worked with another man from a California-based explosive firm, Jerome Brower of California, 60 years old, who was free on personal recognizance. Turple and Brower were to stand trial November the 5th. Turple has gone. The judge briefly mentioned that he's probably in Libya. That's the end of Turple. That's the end of Coracola. The links of the Central Intelligence Agency to the left-wing terrorists will probably never fully be developed because the men have been allowed on their own recognizance to the most important arrest in the United States in a long time to leave the country. There's another thing to some of these narcotic connections of the candidates. An article this week in the Los Angeles Times, 20 tons of pot on the FDR yacht. Many of you read about the arrest. It was a narcotic arrest of 20 tons valued at $40 million. And the important thing is it bore the banner of what they said was the Crippled Children's Society of America, which was a front for narcotics traffic all over the world. They used a yacht that was owned by Franklin Roosevelt when he met with Winston Churchill and so forth. This man bought it saying that he would make it a tourist attraction. It would belong to the archives of history, but he's been bringing narcotics and gun running, exchanging weapons and narcotics and flowing. The shipment brings in narcotics and takes back weapons to suppress people, labor organizations, groups that want to improve their way of life to keep the terrorists killing any public officials that are in their way. There is a Cuban that was murdered, worked for the United Nations this week, who was gunned down by this Omega 7, the same group as Alpha 66 that works with Coracola and Turple. And they claim we're going to, after Saturday and Sunday, we'll start murdering more people from Cuba. There will not be trials. The terrorists, the CIA linked, armed by Cummings and Turple and Coracola, will do like Brazil and have death squads and gun down whoever they want, and they have announced that they will. And meanwhile, Turple and Coracola have spread. But the Crippled Children's Society that was the front, and they used charity fronts, reminds me of a tape I did a while back in an article by Maxine Cheshire on the mysterious connections of John Ellsworth. These were the connections of false children's societies to Rosalind Carter and the use of a charity called City in the Schools and a company that sold toys in New York City that was linked to organized crime and narcotics, prostitution, and International Children's Association. The children's organization has been a front for everything from Jim Jones' operation, where he took children from welfare families and took children away from their parents. But the gun smuggling narcotics operation is used, is very common, and the front for it is this children's group, the International Children's Group, that worked with, was photographed with Rosalind Carter, and there were a lot of murders then that followed her meeting with these people. And John Ellsworth, who set them up, had worked with the Secret Service, the FBI, the Internal Revenue, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the CIA, and organized crime. Now, Ellsworth also worked in California. Aldemont, he was an agent provocateur. And what they've done is to make the Carters, Billy Carter, very visible with the narcotic connections in order to taint Jimmy Carter. They have supplied them overtly so that they're more visible. The Reagan agents are not seen sniffing coke or having marijuana or smoking in the presence of people. The aura of linking Jimmy Carter on the surface to the narcotics connections, like taking Billy Carter to Libya with a drug connection or inviting him down, Irv Davidson, down to a yacht that Clint Murchison owned, and taking Billy Carter and touting around with these big wheelers and dealers such as Vesco is a new thing in order to bring down Jimmy Carter while the strong operation is really engineered basically from California. California is a source of narcotics that keeps this state going very nicely. The politicians are very well greased with it. But there was another article I got from the San Luis Obispo paper on that county being a key drug port, and it goes into the name of a Mr. Bellarmine, who had a rattan furniture company. George Bellarmine and was chairman of it, and he was a confidant of Billy Carter and introduced him to Libya, took him to Libya. And these people were arrested or linked to narcotic arrests, he and his partner, in 1978. And when they were in trouble with the law, Then they went on to the president's brother and take him on trips so that they themselves are not in the front of the narcotic arrest alone. And then that way they can get their prosecutions weakened because Billy and Hamilton Jordan and the various Carter people are in the news with the narcotic people. They had Rosalind Carter with Gacy in Chicago, photographed with Jim Jones, with Ellsworth, with Eppolito, James Eppolito, and all these sleazy characters. They never set up Nancy Reagan with any narcotic connections. You never see her photographed with big dealers or organized crime or mobsters. But in order to discredit Jimmy Carter and embarrass him and to make him very visible, they've set him and his family surrounded by a team, but they're angry at Jimmy Carter, and this is one way to discredit him. But financially, Jimmy Carter has allowed the Middle East connection to increase its profits, and he's reduced the drug forces. He has to have teams or people that are in the pay of the drug connections. He's taken off the agents in Bolivia and Colombia. He has cut down the drug agents so that there's fewer people watching. The murders are rampant in the Florida and the islands down there in the West Indies. The drug witnesses are being killed. There are drug bombings. There are murders everywhere. And they are linked to the drug traffic, the drug war, basically, between these two candidates. And if you follow the drug exposures, the massive arrests at this time, they're very important because one group is trying to pin the narcotics traffic on the other and get them in to break their operation so that they can take over. There was a time when organized crime divided the United States into various sections at the Appalachian meeting in 1957. But the change of guard in the White House, when you change from Nixon and Agnew and a Jimmy Carter comes in, he changes that connecting the continuous flow of the contacts and brings in his own contacts. And it's necessary then to move Jimmy Carter out so they can continue their original flow. That $40 million a year profit goes into the hands of politicians. It goes into their pockets. It's important for their constituency. They build hotels, resorts. They bring in franchises and make the areas look very prosperous. And the politicians thrive on these kinds of businesses. They don't care who runs them or how they're operated. It makes their areas look like there's a lot of activity, industry, and high-priced homes go up, the values escalate, and the mobsters have built them and inflated the prices, but they become choice real estate. The politicians are very vulnerable to the mob figures. They always have been, but it's more obvious now with the Carter administration and the Georgia Mafia and what the Middle Eastern turf has done as against the Southeast Asia. In other programs, I will clarify a little more the drug connection specifically of Ronald Reagan again and then with Jimmy Carter in case it isn't clear. But in the meantime, watch the articles on drug busts and arrests and realize it, from the White House on down, it's very important. This is Mae Brussel and Carmel. You take care and keep clipping those articles. Send them to me. Read them yourself. I'll be back with you next week on KLRB.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.